to Geopolitical Horizons, the podcast from thegeopolity.com. My name is Nizar Hussain, and I am the managing editor at The Geopolity. So, next Tuesday is a US presidential election which takes place in a context where the outcome could have global implications. Now, Donald Trump's first term has been a very eventful one and will leave a lasting impact on the US whether or not he wins next week. So here to discuss this with me is the Geopolity's founder, Adnan Khan. So how are you, Adnan?
I'm good. It's good to be here. How are you?
Not too bad. Okay, just to fire away with the first question. Although everyone's going gaga over the US elections, which is next week, how important really are the elections in terms of, say, foreign policy and domestic power, national power?
So thanks for that. It's actually a very good question to start with, actually, because elections have obviously become a very important part of democracy, and democracy is an essential component of the global order today. And what you find is really elections are not actually very relevant if you look at the strategic direction of countries, if you generally look at foreign policy and national power. And the reason why that is prime ministers, presidents, rulers, they're transitional. They come and go, they have a term. Even if they're two terms, they come and go. So what tends to happen is leaders who are elected, they leave their post. They have a unique approach to the challenges when they are in power. But you find the issues still remain. So, for example, Afghanistan, Iraq, China were issues for America well before Donald Trump came into power. In fact, the presidents before him were dealing with issues in these countries. And when Donald Trump leaves the White House, whether it's next week or in 4 years' time, those challenges will still be there. Probably the only difference in this case is Donald Trump, he's quite a unique ruler from the perspective that he's actually undone a lot of things America had put in place over the last few decades. So in that sense, he becomes quite important. But generally speaking, Donald Trump came to power. America was the global power. There was talk about America maintaining this position. How would it do it? Donald Trump brought his approach to this question. Before him, Obama brought his approach to this question, and prior to him, George W. Bush brought his approach. So if you think about it, really, they're dealing with the same issues, really, just in their own unique ways. So from that perspective, elections are actually not that important. They can lead to changes in terms of how much funding or how much attention is given to certain policies. But in truth, they are just dealing with the same issues, how to keep America's power in the world and how to best deal with the threats that they're facing.
But surely, I mean, elections do have an important impact. Say, for example, war. Say, for example, America's Medicaid, which is kind of similar to the UK's NHS. These kind of things. I mean, elections. Most people would consider elections do have an important say in these kind of areas. Surely, right?
So, if you look at this, under Obama, you had a level of wealth inequality in the country, and under Trump, it's got far worse. So I think the important thing here really is how much impact do elections have and how much impact do a change in government have. And what you tend to find, the differences in the case of America between the two parties is quite small. In fact, in most places in the world, you find the differences between the two main parties are actually quite small. And the reason why that is they're dealing with the same issues, really. Yes, they bring their unique approach to it. So you're right. When Donald Trump was in power, he's got certain resources at his disposal. What does he prioritize may differ compared to previous governments. However, America remaining a power, America utilizing its domestic resources to keep that position going, well, that's a challenge even the next president and the one after is going to face as well. So overall, the impact of elections is debatable. Yes, you're right. Domestically, if I'm an American citizen, as an example, if I'm getting Medicaid, if a new plant is opened in my state and that creates lots of jobs, that can have an impact on my life personally. But overall, in terms of national power and foreign policy, a change of government and election actually has quite a small bearing.
Okay, so you're saying that for international policies, foreign policies, whether you have a centre-right party or centre-left, it doesn't make a difference. So just to clarify, in the UK, the main parties are pretty much always between Labour and Conservatives. So Conservatives are the centre-right, Labour is the centre-left. In America, you have the Democrats, and then you've got the Republicans. Republicans are centre-right, Democrats are centre-left. And that's generally the politics in most democratic countries. It's always centre-left versus centre-right. The centre-right tends to prefer, favour big business, less tax, on the corporations, whereas the centre-left focus more on public spending and possibly workers' rights, things like this, National Health Service. So that's the competition between centre-left and centre-right. So there is at least a difference when it comes to domestic policies within the country, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So what you've got there is each of these governments will have their approach. So yeah, if you're centre-left compared to centre-right, you'll have a slightly different approach. But it's the approach to the same question, which is what's the best use of the country's resources? What's the best use of its resources in terms of maintaining its global power? I mean, we'll take some specific examples. The Labour Party under Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, and the Conservatives all maintained Britain's nuclear capability. If you look at in the US, if you look at on the issue of Israel, the Democrats and Republicans are on the same page. Yes, the Republicans are much more closer to the Zionists in America. They're much more closer to, the Israeli lobby has historically been quite close to the Republican Party. But the Democrats agree, Israel needs to exist. The surrounding countries need to accept their existence, the normalization. There's no difference there. So you'll find on key imperatives, so generally you're looking at national power, these sort of issues, you'll find that there's very little difference between them. Where they may differ is on domestic policy and even priority in terms of resources. So George W. Bush went to war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the presidents after him have all been dealing with what's the best way to draw a line under these conflicts. So Obama was all about reducing troops and maintaining a small presence. Trump said he's going to withdraw troops. He hasn't. So again, both these presidents, the last two, inherited issues from the previous government, the George W. Bush government, so they're having to deal with it. So even if Joe Biden wins next week, his plate has already got items on there that he's going to have to deal with, whether he likes it or not. And you're quite limited. I mean, there's no talk of completely pulling out of these countries that America's involved in. There's a talk of limited withdrawal. There's talk of using private contractors. So what you find is the difference between each government is really about resources and priorities. The overall macro questions remain the same. How to maintain American position, how to make America strong domestically, those questions remain the same.
So essentially you're saying that it's a question of stars and means, whether you're centre-right or centre-left, but they both have the same aim.
Yes, absolutely.
And what did you mean by, so when you said foreign policy, we know what that means, but you said national power. Are you referring to international, so it's international standing?
Yes, so in the case of America, America's international standing is based upon factories producing military equipment, the education system producing people who have a global view. So, America's domestic position is intrinsically linked to how much influence and what it can do abroad. So COVID, I think, has created about 52 million people unemployed in America. Now, these sort of things have an impact on America's global position. So any president who comes to power, he's thinking about, their national sources of power. What do you do with them and how do you increase them? How much resources do you have? How much budget do you have to even devote to this? And then you've got your actual policies abroad as well.
Okay. And so it seems a bit bleak in a way. I mean, but for the US today, currently, where is the US currently today?
So it's a very interesting question because for the last, I would say 5 to 10 years at least, there's been a big discussion within America about America's place in the world. And obviously, because of the two decades wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, there's been a debate globally about America's position, how reliable is America, and how much people in the world can actually rely on America. So today, America actually probably has the worst reputation it's actually ever had. And this is because of the president it's had for the last term. The president it's had is not governed or not. He doesn't act upon ideology. You find he's very transactional. As long as you can give me a good deal, I'm prepared to trade with you. So we saw this with Saudi Arabia, despite the killings of the journalist Khashoggi. You've seen Donald Trump get very cozy with the world's dictators. And in many cases, he's treated his allies worse than he's actually treated his enemies. On the foreign policy front, it's debatable how much progress has been made in Afghanistan, in Syria, in Libya, in Yemen. These conflicts were already in motion when Trump came into power.
Sorry, what do you mean? Can I just ask you a question? What do you mean by the progress in Afghanistan, Syria, Libya? Because, I've been reading a lot of work from Noam Chomsky, and what most people would define as progress is sometimes different from what the politicians define as progress. So, If you're referring to Trump or the US government itself and previous administrations, they've failed to achieve peace in Afghanistan. So in that sense, we can talk about progress in that sense. But what is America's definition of progress in Afghanistan? What's its definition of progress in Syria? What is it aiming for that it would define as progress?
So in the case of Afghanistan, the actual objective has evolved and changed as ground realities also evolved and changed. America never planned to be at war for 2 decades in Afghanistan. It never believed it would. In fact, on paper, you know, the American military should have really wrapped this up within 6 months, which they believe they did at the beginning. It seemed the American plan was they would invade, they'd remove the regime, the Taliban, they would put in a new regime, and Afghanistan would be the poster child for democracy in the region. Quite clearly, after 2 decades, it's not turned out that way. So what America's done is it's had to adapt and evolve. So having a democratic government has gone out the window. It's now negotiating with the enemy that it apparently fought and defeated, because America's concluded now that a military victory is not actually possible.
What do you mean democratic window, thrown out the window? What are you referring to?
So there was talk when America invaded of democratizing much of the world, especially the Muslim world, the Middle East and South Asia. So the invasion of Afghanistan was also cloaked with that it would become a new democratic country and America would help it by removing the Taliban, who were autocratic, and by helping the country transition to democracy. That was abandoned very quickly because it became quite obvious that who the government that America backed in Kabul struggles to even govern beyond its own compound.
It doesn't have organic support within Afghanistan, does it?
Yeah, that's the up. So America has gone in and worked. I mean, the American invasion of Afghanistan started from the north of the country, from the minority population of the country. They're the ones who actually backed the American invasion. The vast majority of people who are Pashtun, they actually fought America and still fighting America. America found certain individuals they could work with. Hamid Karzai spent most of his life in America. They put him in power. So if we go by the definition of success America had at the beginning, well, even they've deviated from that completely because they know that's not attainable now. So what seems to have happened is the objective constantly evolves and changes. I would say the strategic objective of America in Afghanistan has always been to bring this country under American influence and effectively to use it as a forward base for the region, so for Central Asia, for the emergence of China, and for Russia. So that America has achieved. America has 3 permanent bases in the country. Even if it withdraws its troops, those bases are remaining. They've already got that agreed. All they need now is for someone to run Afghanistan domestically, and the hope was the regime America supports they'll be able to achieve that. It seems that's not achievable because whoever America has turned to are unable to govern over the whole country. In fact, the Taliban, I think, govern now or control at least half of the country. So America's now concluded you're better off negotiating with the Taliban serves its agenda than fighting against it. And obviously, America's a global power. America has global responsibility. They can't be bogged down for too long in one area of the world because it's going to be everywhere. So in Afghanistan, you know, it doesn't look at all the way America saw it. But that doesn't now mean America's abandoning Afghanistan and going home. America's adapting. And this has cost resources. It's cost money. It's cost American lives. And successive American presidents are even struggling to justify what they're doing in Afghanistan. So Donald Trump came to power on the basis that he's going to withdraw everyone from Afghanistan. He turned his back on that after his first review. He said, we're going to stay now. And to be honest with you, since then, he's been more preoccupied elsewhere.
What about Obama? Because the Democrats, Obama was with the Democrats, and they're a centre-left party. Did they reduce troop numbers? What was their... Usually, typically, centre-left parties are supposed to be against war. So what was the situation with the Democrats when they were in power?
So Obama, when he came into power in 2009, he did a couple of things. He promised that he would withdraw troops to half the level, at least half the level they were. So initially, there was a surge of troops. And then, yeah, before he left office, he had drastically reduced the troops. But what's happened here is troop numbers have become political. So rather than troop numbers being relative to success on the ground, troop numbers has become relative to electoral polls and election dates. And this is why General Stanley McChrystal, he openly attacked the Obama regime because he was given troops for a surge. But the day after, Obama announced that within a year, they're going to be coming back home. And eventually, McChrystal was removed from his position. So this shows you that Afghanistan, to a large degree, has become a mess. You know, even some of the departments and institutes are moving and pushing in different directions. And all of this is based on America never envisaged being in Afghanistan with such a presence for such a period of time.
Mm. Okay, that's interesting. So bringing things to Trump, how would you, with the recent administration, which is the center-right Republicans, how would you sum up Trump's term?
So I think with Donald Trump, it's quite hard to categorize him because he's so, you know, on a daily basis, he's chopping and changing his views and his policies. What we do know, two things that definitely define Donald Trump is he's very transactional. So you know, selling arms to brutal dictators he had no problem with. Supporting countries like Saudi Arabia, who he considers allies, he had, you know, he openly did this despite what happened with the journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Also, we see with Donald Trump, there's very little role for ideology. For him, it's very transactional. You know, American values, the international system, democracy, freedom, none of these really played a role when it came to Donald Trump's administration. So those are the two things that really defined him. However, if we look at his main promises, Trump has quite a mixed record, really, with his term. He obviously, his main narrative was that America's being ripped off. America's allies, whether it's NATO or international organizations, they're not paying enough. America's doing the heavy lifting. So he said he's going to basically change this. He also advocated that the trade deals America has, America is losing out. And he's basically going to change this. And these were really his two key main positions, that the international system isn't really working for America and he's going to rip the whole thing apart. And to be honest with you, probably the main area he has delivered on is renegotiating the trade deals. If you look at NAFTA, he's completely renegotiated it. He negotiated it by actually imposing terms on his allies. So America's main trade partners, Mexico, Canada, Japan, Germany, South Korea, were literally set the terms, take it or leave it, otherwise we're out. So Donald Trump got his ambassador to agree a new NAFTA with Mexico. That deal was sent to Canada and they were told you got 7 days to agree it. Canada buckled after 6 days. So really, it wasn't really a negotiation. It was America giving terms. And basically other countries accepted. Trump removed America from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He removed them from the Paris Climate Accord. So on those issues, he's actually delivered. On the trade war with China, he said that he considers China a currency speculator, a currency manipulator. So he's going to put sanctions on them. He actually started the sanctions. However, in a further trade deal, he actually removed them. And the trade war with China is still ongoing. It by no means has even ended. So that's still work in progress. In Afghanistan, he said he would withdraw troops. That hasn't happened. Trump said he would build a wall and he would get the Mexicans to pay for it. He hasn't built a wall and the Mexicans haven't paid for it as well. Domestically, he made a number of promises to his people. And again, it's a mixed message. He's done tax cuts. He's removed deregulation. But you find on many, many other issues defense, on introducing new manufacturing and improving the economy, that hasn't happened. I mean, you could argue up until COVID, the economy was stable. After COVID, obviously, the economy has gone in a different direction. So really, I would summarize Donald Trump's term as he promised a lot. He brought his very unique and very up and down position on the presidency. However, on most of the issues he's promised, and I was just reading a stat the other day, one of the American newspapers said he made 286 promises and he has barely delivered on 10% of them.
Wow. With the Republicans and Trump in power, is America in a weaker position now?
So what's really taken a hit is America's image around the world. Definitely Trump has made the American image much worse in the world. I mean, all the opinion polls show very negative views towards America. And this is in parallel with Donald Trump. Donald Trump took a very aggressive and authoritarian approach to global issues. So even on his own allies, I mean, he's regularly humiliated and bullied Angela Merkel of Germany. He did the same with South Korea and Japan. In fact, with South Korea, the base America has up for renewal. And Donald Trump said, unless you don't pay us $5 billion instead of the $1 billion, we're going to withdraw our troops. So America's reliability as an ally, confidence in America, and even confidence in America maintaining the global order that it created, really there are serious question marks over these. So definitely America today is in a worse position it was since the day Donald Trump entered into the White House.
Well, wasn't there an American president who once said there's no such thing as permanent allies, there are only temporary interests?
Yes, it was Lord Shaftesbury of the British Empire. That is true. You know, interest is what defines the global order today. But you find that there are certain interests that had even become institutionalized. So America's relationship with Europe, you know, Europe and America were on the same side, were one bloc against the Soviet Union. America's security guarantee to Germany, to South Korea, to Japan was something that effectively became an institution itself rather than an interest. What Trump did is he looked at all of these from a financial perspective, the cost on America, how much America is costing and how much its security allies are even paying towards it. He didn't, for example, say, well, Germany is a developed nation today, so Germany can prioritize on security. His whole focus was, it's costing a lot and you're not paying enough, so we're up. So, you know, it's not just American interests, eh? You know, it's a very transactional view. And America has always had the image of being a nation that has some principles and values. So presidents come and go, but American values were always the same. What Trump's done is completely ripped that whole sheet apart. So really, if you're a leader in the world, you really just don't know where you stand with America. I mean, if Trump wins next week, there are some countries, because in the second term, there's nothing to fight for a third term. You can only have two terms as a president in America. It depends now how much of Congress and the House of Representatives he wins. But the likely chance is the gloves are off for Trump. He can actually continue with a lot more that he wants to do. So that, for a lot of rulers around the world, it creates a lot of uncertainty. And American allies are more uncertain about America. I mean, the enemies were always on the back foot. But America's own allies don't really know where they stand.
Okay. I mean, the thing is, a lot of the time I notice, whether it's the Trump administration, Obama, or the Bush administration, there's almost like a celebrity politics to democracy, where where media outlets focus a lot on a particular individual. And I think surely all the decisions that are made in government is a collective decision. The danger of focusing too much on individuals, there's a risk of not holding the entire system to account, whereby people think it's only to do with... So that particular celebrity figurehead, which is just the public face of the government, they become like the sacrificial lamb for that particular political party, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, for them to survive another day. So they feed that particular politician, that president or prime minister, to the wolves, really, essentially. But to sort of investigate that, what's the difference? How does the Trump administration compare to the Bush administration? Because they were both Republican. They were both Republican. They were both centre-right. Is there a similarity between them? Is there a difference? I mean, because in terms of the next election, even if whether Trump wins or loses, is it something that we should... Does a centre-left and centre-right concept doesn't mean anything anymore?
So what you find is these political identities really are becoming a thing of the past. When it comes to elections, or generally when it comes to identity, people are turning more and more to nationalism, to the right wing. They are moving away from identifying with left and right politics. In fact, people identify more now with being middle class, with being elite, with being labor workers. You're finding this political identity of the past, center and left, it's becoming more and more something of the past. Even in the UK now, a lot of people identify more with, are you a Brexiteer or a Remainer, rather than Labour or the Tories. I mean, the Tory party was ripped apart with this whole idea. So in the case of the US, so even Donald Trump, who has never been in political office, people from both sides, Democrats and Republicans, voted for him. Many people voted for him because of the lesser of two evils. And many people voted because they're identified with the outsider. Normal politicians are not listening to us. So people are turning more and more to unconventional political parties and politicians. And that's why reality TV stars are doing very well. In the case of France, a complete outsider got in. And you're finding people who were considered quite unconventional are doing pretty well, because people generally feel the normal crop of politician, the normal system, just doesn't even recognize we even exist anymore. So in the case you find of the Republicans, George W. Bush and Donald Trump, now, okay, the circumstances are slightly different. With Trump, there was a feeling the system isn't working for the people. There was a feeling by white America that they've been left behind. And Donald Trump really ran a whole campaign on that particular sentiment. So he's coming to power. And to be honest with you, up until COVID, you know, he probably did an all right job. COVID really has changed the game slightly. And I think if he doesn't win, I think his response to COVID would be quite a big factor. Just, you know, some of his speeches, some of his solutions, and just his whole brazen view of, you know, we're over the worst of it, things are getting better, when in states things have been really, really bad. So I think what you find is that more and more people are identifying with factors which are quite temporary, which are even a protest vote, or factors which are linked to race and these sort of things, rather than political identity that we had in the past.
Okay, that's interesting. Because even when the Democrats, through Obama, were in power, you still had police brutality, and that's when Black Lives Matter really kicked off, isn't it, under Obama himself. So that wasn't necessarily a Bush thing. It came... So that the issue there was there's a problem in America fundamentally, irrespective of whether Democrats or Republicans, right?
Yeah, I mean, what you'll find in America, and you'll find this across the developed world generally, is government is becoming more and more representative of the 1% at the top of their societies rather than the vast majority of people. So you find economic inequality is so rife. This is why people are turning more and more to the right wing in the hope that things might be different. I mean, in the UK, the whole COVID response, you've seen test and trace, you've seen the whole architecture for dealing with COVID has basically been given out to the friends of the Tory politicians. That's not just in the UK, you've seen that across other parts of the world. So what you're finding now is the top 1% really is being represented in government compared to the rest. I mean, just last week, politicians in the UK in Parliament were mocking the fact that children or parents of children are asking for an extension of food vouchers over the half-term break. And they were mocking parents for even requesting this thing. They need to take responsibility. So these are the poorest elements from society effectively begging government for help because of some of the lockdowns. And this has been the response. And in fact, more and more of the politicians in the developed world, they're just completely in a different world compared to the vast majority of their populations. Most of the people hit by COVID are your average workers, your labor workers, your bottom half of society. And you find, the last decade or so, the economic crisis of 2008, the response to it, the bailing out of different companies now with COVID, you're finding that the top 1% are being taken care of compared to the rest of society. So this is why all the polls and all the surveys into democracy really show that confidence in democracy is rock bottom. That's how bad it basically is. And this is why whoever takes over next week, you're dealing with some serious ingrained societal issues, which require some level of principles and ideology to navigate through them. In Donald Trump, you had someone who took advantage of these divisions. So rather than healing America, he tried to use the divide. He tried to use the black Americans who were fighting for their rights. He tried to use that for his own electoral purposes.
But even if populist parties, so like in Europe, increasingly you find more populist parties on the fringes, they're coming to power. But surely that's still a victory for democracy, because by definition it's whatever the people want, right? So what's wrong with, from a purely academic theoretical point of view, what's wrong if these populist powers come to power? Because that is the definition of democracy. If it's popular and the people like it, that is giving power to the people.
Yeah, you're right. In theory, there should be no problem with that. The problem with that is, it's interesting because in some countries, the electoral system was designed to make sure unconventional parties never get to power. So in France, they have two rounds to their election for this reason. So in the first, to win the first round, you have to get 50% of the vote. If you don't, then the top two parties go through to a second round. And what usually happens in the second round is the unconventional party never picks up all the other remaining votes. So Marine Le Pen, I think, got 30% of the vote last time, and she still couldn't win in the end. So what you find is, although theoretically it's popular, you find that the elites of the developed world, yeah, so these are your large corporations, your rich, for them, they still, the right wings are too radical for them. They still want certain parties in power. And this goes back down to really is, in theory, democracy is one thing, but in practice, it's very different.
Okay. So, I mean, with America, with the elections, irrespective of who wins, what would the US priorities be? What would the politics be, or how would it look like in the future after the elections?
So you're absolutely right. Whoever wins the election, America has got priorities, whoever wins. And really, whoever does win is going to have to deal with these priorities, whether they like it or not. In fact, the electoral result makes no difference to this. So probably the main priority America's going to have is China and Southeast Asia. China is a rising power. China is laying claim to Southeast Asia. This represents a threat to America's global position. So under the Bush administration, America had a containment policy. Trump had then taken this into a trade war. And whoever comes into power, it's very unlikely you can reverse this, because there's agreement in Congress, there's even agreement amongst the elites of America, China has to be dealt with. So I can't see this policy changing. Maybe there may be more talks from a Biden administration with China. But with Trump, you're seeing, I think, most of China's imports, most of China's exports to America all have tariffs on them now. So that's going to be the first priority. The second one is going to be Afghanistan, getting some semblance of stability in that particular country. There's talks going on with the Taliban. They're still ongoing. The fundamental problem in Afghanistan is the Taliban don't need to negotiate. They're in a winning position. It's America in the weak position. If America wants to resolve this, there's two options. You either talk and compromise and get an agreement, or there's a massive escalation of American troops to retake the country, which is very unlikely. I mean, if you want to be a really unpopular president, then the second option is there for you. So Afghanistan is a second priority. The third priority is Europe. China is investing a lot in Europe. America had the transatlantic relationship, which is broken down because of Trump's actions. So if Trump gets to power, he will probably continue with the same policy. You know, Europe are free riders. They need to pay more. If Biden comes in, the likely chance he's going to try and repair bridges with them. But Europe's important because Europe forms effectively the Western bloc against the rest of the world. And especially with a rising China and with Russia, it's more important for America, Europe and America become the bloc against these Eastern countries. The fourth priority is America's global image and position. America has the worst reputation globally currently. Now, I'm not sure exactly how you fix this because Trump's done such a good job of tearing it all apart. However, a democratic government will probably do some actions to show that they're different regardless. And I think this has long-term implications for America. If you don't want countries to join China, if you don't want people to take Chinese investment, if you don't want people to, countries to take China's 5G, America needs to seriously look at its global image and even the global system that it established. And then probably the fifth priority is going to be Iran. America, under Obama, you had a nuclear deal where you effectively put restrictions on Iran's nuclear program in return for allowing Iran to engage in the international system.
Nuclear energy.
Yeah. Nuclear energy, yes. So what Trump did, what the nuclear agreement Obama did, it wasn't comprehensive. It was purely on the nuclear energy. It wasn't on the ballistic missiles Iran has and its other military capability. So Trump, and again, Obama barely got this through Congress. There was actually a lot of opposition to this nuclear agreement. So when Trump came into power and he said, I'm going to rip the whole thing up, he had quite a lot of congressional support for this. Now, Iran obviously is very, the Middle East is changing. You've got country, Iraq, Egypt and Syria were the cornerstone of the Middle East. This is now really shifted to Saudi and the Gulf nations who are all normalizing ties with Israel. And America's been able to achieve a lot of this by the way he's dealt with Iran. Now, Biden has actually mentioned a number of times that he plans to bring back the nuclear deal. He believes that engaging with Iran is the best way of dealing with them rather than isolating them. So the obviously the implication of Iran is huge. It has an impact on the region. Israel, Saudi, the Gulf states, their relationship with America is based to some degree upon how they deal with Iran. So these are really the five priorities. And as you can see, it doesn't matter which government comes in. These are the five challenges America faces.
When you say America's global image, because that was one of the points you mentioned, are you referring, surely you're referring to America's global image in the eyes of other governments, not necessarily other people. So forget when you're not referring to what people in Latin America think of America. You're not referring to people in Southeast Asia, Muslim world, Africa. You're not referring to what the people of the world think of America, but you're talking about the regimes around the world. Is that the case? Allies? And
no, a bit of both. America's reputation with both, with the people of the world is bad, and it's far worse with the rulers in the world as well. Both America has a problem, and at the moment, America's not had to deal with the fallout of this because America, Trump's just been imposing on other governments. But America's got a challenge now. China is offering low-cost 5G tech, low-cost AI, is effectively laying down the building blocks of future tech. And if you can't rely on America, and if America's bullying you around, China is a very good option. And this is why America's actually put sanctions on Huawei. So even if Huawei laid down the 5G network in Europe, they can't use the dollars because America's put sanctions on them. So this has implications now. And this is the thing. Trump may have looked strong for domestic purposes. The American people or segment of them may have actually liked that Trump throwing his weight around. But there are implications now that the next government is going to have to actually deal with. And this is not just Europe. If you look at Pakistan as an example, it has a very deep relationship with China. There's nothing stopping it from working more with China than America. In fact, China has got its economic fingers into every continent across the world. There's nothing stopping countries of the world, the rulers, turning to China. And also, there may be public opinion now that countries want their rulers to work with China rather than America because America's unreliable.
Okay. So how do you see both Trump and Biden, depending on who wins, navigating the US challenges?
So I think if we get a Trump victory, I think with China, he will probably go more aggressive. He agreed a phase one deal with China at the end of last year. And all a phase one deal was is on the core issues there was no discussion. There was some agreement on more peripheral issues. The key challenge America's having with China is it's trying to impose loads of restrictions on them, on intellectual property, on them exporting more to America than America buys from it. I suspect Trump, if he wins, will go more aggressive on China because he's got the mandate now to do it and he doesn't have a third term to actually worry about. Trump's main issues are probably going to be domestically. America's very divided. His electoral campaign, his political position in the country is based upon him supporting the right wing or the white America that who feel they've lost out. So I think these will be his two priorities. If Biden comes to power, I suspect he will, and you know, the Democrats have always been internationalists. Their view is we should get the whole world together, get our allies together and work collectively. So I think he will focus more on America's image, America's global position. He's not as unconventional as Trump. Keep in mind, he was Secretary of State, if I'm correct, under Obama. So he was in power not that long ago. In fact, just before Trump took over, he's got a lot more experience. He's got political capital, which he can use to improve America's position. So, yeah, I think there will be the two main priorities and two main differences between the two. But the fact both are going to have to deal with China, both are going to have to deal with Afghanistan, both are going to have to deal with Europe, and both are going to have to deal with America's global position. They may choose not to deal with it, the Trump administration, but these priorities are going to remain the same. So, you know, whoever wins next week really would be deciding how they plan to deal with these issues rather than what issues they're going to deal with.
Okay, thanks for your time today, Adnan. If you want to learn more about these issues raised today, please check out our website, www.thegeopolity.com, all one word. You can also learn more on the other issues by accessing our website, where you find comprehensive insights. I'm Nizar Hussain. Thanks for listening.